Harry, I heard you.
Harry, are you there as well?
I am. You asked for someone to call in.
We have the great triad now, and we're very fortunate. Welcome, everybody. We're back from a little break, the Thanksgiving holidays and my traveling, but it's Wednesday night. It's 7 o'clock on the west coast of California, of the United States, and we're working our way through the hidden work. As Ivan said earlier, this chapter is, I said, this is a tough chapter and people are going to have a hard time with it. His response is, but it's a short chapter. So
yeah, really.
I guess that's how we evaluate things. However, I didn't have that simple a time. But I want to say something here. So this is a complex chapter. It's very difficult. And Mark, I don't know if Mark's on the line. Is Mark on, Dan?
Mark Roche.
Good. Mark and Dan did a strong, a lot of work on the summary. And then I haven't answered Mark yet, but he had a great, both Mark and Dan did a lot of good work. And then I asked for help from Silverdale, who gave me a great, great, great amount of help and a great response. And I'm hoping that all three of you would post your responses on the site for others to see as well. Very good information. So I want to thank everybody. It's becoming more of an integrated group effort. next week, I'm not sure if Lupe is here tonight, but Harry and Lupe are working on Chapter 7. And then I'll be assigning 8, 9, and 10 over the weekend as well. So welcome again back to the hidden work. We're back into it, and we're back into it up to our necks. So without further ado, Ivan, do you want to get us started then?
Okay, with Chapter 6, Mother and Child, the summary. An evolved man is like a mother, and the Absolute is like his child in the sense that he sacrifices to the Absolute his being, a smaller diamond for the abrasion of the Absolute. He offers his soul, which he has produced by his own conscious labors, as a grinding wheel for the eventual change of the being of the Absolute.
Okay, so that's a big mouthful, all right?
Yeah.
It's a big mouthful, and I want to make sure that we're here and we're back focused on this. I know that Susan and Simon posted some stuff on Chapter 5, which is interesting too, and strong, but get yourself here too. This is a lot. And we're going to, the first three paragraphs of this chapter, we're going to take a little bit of time on unpacking them because they're the key to the rest of the chapter. Okay, so let's just get here, spend some time, get the road dust off. You know, just come and arrive. And we heard how people do that in one of the other classes, and I think people have that in the log. I can't remember which class we asked that, but I remember Jim, H, and Simon, and Sheila, Aria posted some very interesting things. So get yourself here. So let's just, we're going to read through a few of these paragraphs. If one is able to pacify the mental centrum of the machine, at least partially, one has a good beginning for the accumulation of will to awaken the machine. Now let's look at that, how that's formulated too. And Georges, you'll find this interesting. At this paragraph, he's saying, if one can pacify the mental centrum. All right, so the approach there is the mental centrum, the monkey mind, let's say, the associative thinking, so on and so forth, is doing its thing. And then, so let's pacify. Okay, that's one approach versus the approach we're going to see coming up in two paragraphs. But of course, there are many cravings and habits within the machine, some mental, some emotional, many activities, each forming a momentary centrum of gravity, which briefly becomes the dictator of the whole machine at that moment. And that's basically how we wind up living our life. Is, you know, let's say that somebody becomes just an absolute fanatic at raising snakes, and they're just into it, right? And they become like just experts, world experts at it, and they find out the different types of snakes. What do snakes do in the summer? What do snakes do in the winter?
Yeah, right.
And on and on and on and on. Their whole focus is on snakes. And I say that humor, you know, with a bit of humor, but I tell you that people, like, we live in a small town here in Grass Valley. Two or three times a year, there's what's called a vintage car.
Oh, yeah, vintage car show, yeah.
These old people have restored these old cars, thousands of dollars that they put into it, and an immense amount of effort to get the right knob for their 1956 Chevrolet Bel Air. It was an exact knob, and on and on and on and on like that. They just delve into these things, and it's staggering to me. But this is the where the centrum of gravity is this whole pool. It's a vortex of attention that comes about, and we're into it. We're into that, right? That's one way of living your life. Now let's see what the next paragraph says. How can we keep ourselves free from these momentary influences operating on the machine from within the machine? Now he's introducing the whole different approach. Can you keep the dominance of these activities at bay? Can we do something different, but from within? Is there something from within? If we have another centrum of gravity, and this is what Mark focused on in this last email, if we have another centrum of gravity beyond the machine's centrum of gravity, then we have a slender chance to escape its influence on our beings. And then I wrote, well, maybe it's the only chance that we have of escape. Now, this is everything. Okay, so now, I want to ask everybody, what do you think he means here? Another centrum of gravity. We understand that another centrum of gravity might be something like the essential self, right? But how does that work specifically for you? And I really would like people to answer that question, and the phone people, unfortunately, are on the spot, and I'm going to ask Ivan and Dan, who are here with us, Lost Horizon, to answer that question, to start us off. And Ivan, you have the microphone, so you have to go first.
That really puts me on the spot.
So you are on the spot, and you're next. So what is the centrum of, when you read this stuff in this book, maybe do you respond to it, first of all? Do you have a response? Is there a harmony about it?
This passage?
So you read a passage and it says, another centrum of gravity. Or just the idea of centrum of gravity. Dan's over there nodding his head cautiously.
I find it rather mysterious. I mean, to me, it's rather a mysterious idea, and I think it's a fascinating idea. I think it's an engaging idea because, you know, the characteristic of the machine centrum of gravity is that it's this thing one moment and this another moment and this another moment. That there's this a bundle of wants and desires. I mean, this sounds, you know, EJ sounds a lot like a Buddhist to me in these passages here because, you know,
kind of.
Well,
in the first two paragraphs, yes, I'll give that to you.
Well, this idea of this centrum of gravity, another centrum of gravity that's outside the machine means, oh, well, what is that centrum of gravity that's outside the machine? Well, oh, how about my classic car? Oh, no, not that. That's the machine. How about my dinner? That's the machine. How about my PhD? That's the machine. How about my wife and family? That's the machine.
Yeah.
So it's not this, not this, not this, not this, not this. You know, so what is in the realm of the essential self? You know, what is it that's not machine?
Well,
like, how do you get to it?
Well, you mean like my interest in typeface?
Whatever. Yeah. I mean, I'm
deep
by
into
the way,
it,
I've
though.
Met at least one or two of those people, the herpetologists. they're more interesting than the classic car people.
I see.
Anyway, but I think it's machine, yeah. I think it's a machine.
So what's the physical mechanism, Dan, or Susan, or Harry, or what's the physical mechanism because of my love of typefaces here? I spend many hours a day studying 19th century typefaces.
You're a regular font of wisdom, dude.
I'm a font of wisdom.
Well,
I can't
David,
imagine.
For me, the new centrum of gravity is literally a presence that's situated above my head and somehow comes down and comes out through my heart when I relate with other people.
Okay, so... Now, so Harry...
I don't know if that makes sense, but that's how I experience it.
It doesn't matter. We're just logging it right now. This is the green light period. What's the first thing that comes forth for you if you haven't thought about this a great deal? What's the thing that comes forth for you? Something. Nothing is not the answer.
It seems to me it's vibrational.
Vibrational, she says. Now, let's penetrate that a little bit, Susan, okay?
Okay.
I mean, like, I also happen to be an expert at ancient snare drums, and they're vibrational. Is that what you mean?
Well, sure.
I think he's being difficult, Susan.
Yeah, but it's true. A vibration is just a form of energy.
So discern and distinguish the type of what do you mean by vibrational?
Well, when it says if we have another centrum of gravity beyond the machine centrum.
Yes.
So it means something that we can reach inside and pull toward.
For you particularly, is it a specific form, a specific vibrational notation?
I don't know.
Yes, no, maybe so. Do we have any answers?
We've got quite a few comments.
Okay. Can you help us out here?
What are people saying, Susan?
Please, okay. we need to be saved here.
Okay, so Simon is saying not the habitual pull of desires from the
Good.
Machine, but
Perfect.
A unified center of gravity from the essential self.
Okay, so he says the words, the vibration or something from the essential self. What do you mean by that, Simon? How does it work in you? What goes on? When you say those words, that's great. But what does it actually mean? I'm not getting to Silverdale at all yet, so no.
I have a question. Isn't the centrum of gravity a balancing point?
I don't know if I'd call it a balancing point. I'd call it a sink.
A fulcrum?
No, a fulcrum is something that it balances on. It's so like if the centrum of gravity, if a fulcrum would be like this, right? Where this is the fulcrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the point at which something balances.
Now, I've heard some people say that most of the time we're focused on the machine centrum of gravity, which is outside ourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the other part?
The essential self.
And when the essential self comes to be, and that's what Simon is trying to tell us here, right?
Well, you know, this chapter uses that word pacify. So the machine is passive. If the essential self becomes active, the machine is pacified.
If the essential self
according to our studies
activated, then that's that third paragraph in the opening part of the book here. What else, Susan, please?
Okay, we have Arya. My center of gravity that is not from a momentary influence comes from my ability to observe myself. So constantly self-monitor and be in a place of presence and attention. I move from a very different place, a different way, more graceful than when I move from a different place.
Okay, so she's saying that she notices that something happens differently when she's in that different place, right?
Right.
Okay, that's good.
She goes on to say, physically for me, it is a field of energy that feels more solid around me, and a lightness of my third eye region, a sensing and knowing, observing.
Some similarities to what Harry told us then. Okay.
We've got
anybody
Piondro
else?
Yeah, Piondro. Hold on, I had a computer. Piondro's saying the new centrum of gravity is for me a present which is literally above me, which descends through my heart area. It has a
presence. Is that what he said?
He says like a presence. He's calling it a presence that's above him that descends through his heart when he's interacting with somebody else.
It has a distinct
that
vibration.
Sounds like an energy or a vibration somewhat.
Yep.
Yeah, he says it has a distinct vibration that does not change from one experience to another.
Okay. Let's underline that.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to remember to underline it in the chat. It's a distinct vibration. It's distinct. All right? It's a distinct vibration. And I happen to know that you know it's very distinct for you too, Susan. And it's taking the boldness to say, yeah, it is distinct. And I know what it feels like. You know, I worked with a guy named Richard Rose for a long time, and great, great guy. And one of the things he would say is, well, maybe you don't know what the truth is, but maybe you know how to retreat from untruth. So maybe you know when you're getting closer to it. Okay, anybody else?
Yes. Dulcim, it is the resonance between me and you, the connection between two.
Okay.
The connection between
two. Okay.
Mark Roach says, for instance, on a certain level, the Earth is a real big centrum of gravity.
Correct.
Pathworld said, I find myself getting very frustrated at the moment because I can't get it.
It's funny because, you know, Pathworld can go into that space. And yet, her brain, her mental centrum is saying, I can't get it. Sometimes you have to give up and surrender a little bit, too. Very good. Very good. I'm glad you said that, Pathworld.
Simon says, I have somehow begun to differentiate the wills and pulls of the machine, and another that is a will of a different nature.
Okay.
That is the beginning of unification that I can feed.
Okay. And one of the things that we have to be careful of is that when we enter this new world, this new land, this undiscovered country, when we enter it, it's a different language. It'll have a different language than the language of the machine. It's a very different thing. It works differently, like Aria was telling. She notices that she works differently, operates, moves, speed. Believe me, you will recognize it. Okay, anybody else?
Adulthum says, like a tuning fork.
Okay, very good. Vibrations, vibrations, vibrations. That's what I keep hearing.
Actually, I like that. A tuning fork in the sense that, you know, when you hit that tuning fork, then it pulls A or E or whatever that resonance is. If the string is A or E, it'll resonate with that tuning fork. So it draws anything of that same vibration to it. I mean, I think of, you know, I'm trying to remember which book it's in when EJ talks about having a centrum of gravity question, you know, to take a question and make it your centrum of gravity for a week, a month, a year, or whatever. It means to focus, again, to get beyond, yeah, in the human biological machine, to push yourself out of your ordinary awareness, your machine focus, machine behavior, machine thoughts and feelings and so on, and you focus on something to make it your centrum of gravity, which is to say everything revolves around that question. You keep it in the forefront of your mind. You use that question all day long. You keep that question close to you.
And that's like so, in the in the practice of the koan.
You know, or a mantra.
Yeah. Same thing, the practice of the koan or the mantra. I've told the story a number of times where this told to me by a monk that, you know, the Roshi gave them a question, a koan. Mm-hmm. And these are remarkably obtuse. You know, the answers to them are just huge. Like, you know, one of the great common ones is, what is mu? And, you know, that is nothingness. Well, what is nothingness? How can you talk? And so he'd give everybody these questions, right? He'd give you the question. And then every morning at 6 a.m., you'd show up at the dojo, and you'd have to come in and tell him the answer. Well, you know, and so you'd come in, you'd sit before the master, you begin to tell him the answer, and if he didn't like what he had to say, he'd ring the bell and he'd have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, as they started to enter, he'd ring the bell. So, what's the answer? And so, every day, you were faced with that. And he said, it's like having a molten lead in your stomach. That's how important that centrum of gravity question was. So that's a way of creating something called a centrum of gravity. By the nature of the koans, they're often not external. Therefore, it helps you stay internal. But once again, it has to do with the mechanism of what is the centrum of gravity. Changing the centrum of gravity, read the first sentence of the last paragraph on that first page.
How can we keep ourselves free from these momentary influences operating on the machine, from within the machine?
From within the machine, and the next sentence is...
we are within the machine. If we have another centrum of gravity...
Okay. So if we have another...
Beyond the machine centrum of gravity.
So we're talking about creating the centrum of gravity, and the reason I'm spending so much time on it is because I'm not interested in the theoretical bantering about this. What I want to know is, do we have any, just a foothold, a tiny foothold on what centrum of gravity means for you when you feel that you're in a higher space? Like right now,
right now in this class, okay, just pause for a second. Notate the vibratory, whatever Susan was telling us, the vibration, but this particular vibration. And for me, virtually the entire book is about comparing and contrasting that. And that vibration of the higher vibratory sensation, so that it becomes so clear and distinct to you that no matter where you are, you can say on or off. Now, the Voyager, and we are Voyagers, as Voyagers, we want to learn, how do I navigate back to that vibratory sensation? And you say, oh, well, you know, if it's really chaotic outside and people are really loud, I can't do it. Oh? That's not the point. The point is, can you find a inner centrum of gravity that is different than the machine centrum of gravity? And so Susan gave us the hint here. It's a vibratory sensation. And Harry distinguishes it. It's a distinct. And it doesn't change when you're in, you know, like all you party animals, and you go to this party or that party or that party or that party. It's the same. That's the objective sensitivity that we create within ourselves. So that's, we've left Kansas already, okay? We've left Kansas, and we are in a different land. So that's the heart of this chapter, is can we find a different and distinct inner centrum of gravity? I think the answer we're hearing from everybody is yes. Go ahead, Susan.
Simon is saying centrum of gravity is equal as centrum of stability in the sense that it has always the same purpose. Not like the machine centers.
Okay.
So the former gives us the stability to carry on with our work. The later doesn't.
Good.
Very nice.
Good. Good one.
And then Vader says, the centrum of gravity weighs down my choices and actions when I am off course.
And who is that again?
Vader? V-A-D-E-R-E?
Okay.
And then Mark Roach is saying the objective sensitivity that we create within ourselves. Really like that phrasing, David.
So nice.
Yeah.
Say it again for all of us.
The objective sensitivity that we create within ourselves.
Objective sensitivity that we create within ourselves.
Okay.
Is that right, Susan? Did he get it?
Yes.
Yes, he did, didn't he? Perfect, Mark.
And then Jim H. said that that reminds him of conscience.
Conscience is part of it. Once the inner centrum of gravity is active and alive, conscience then has a chance to be alive. You know?
He does talk about that in this chapter.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Great comments.
That's all for now.
That's all for now. And then the next two paragraphs compare and contrast the... Then now EJ introduces the idea of the mother and the child. And then he says that the child, in regular life, in most regular life, the mother goes, oh, here's my hobby. Here's my vintage car. It's a child. And they learn exactly what the right formula is, and they go to, how do you deal with colic, and how do you, the right, should I use paper diapers or cloth, and on and on and on. And all that's great. That's important. It's good. But if it's you, if it that is your focus of attention, is all outside you, then it, in a certain way, badly to say, then it's a machine activity. Delicate ground here, I understand that. Because being a good mother doesn't mean that you are only, all your attention is outside. So the next paragraph he begins to use, he says, oh, wait a minute, what if the mother keeps the attention internally, and that the centrum of gravity never changes, and yet there is the child. Yet there is a child. What does he mean here? Is this just regular mother and child? I mean, what is meant by this? I'm not sure if I get it. Is it just like mother and child?
Well, he's obviously not saying that the mother ignores the child. So he's talking about a difference of focus or a difference of attitude in child rearing. I mean, I think that this is like the bringing the woman to life chapter in the Human Biological Machine, that the analogy holds up. I mean, the details, the process or the suggestions that he's giving about parenting are valid. I mean, I think that he's not just being esoteric. He's saying, you know, that this is a valid choice. It's a valid piece of advice on parenting, you know, which again, like David says, is a very delicate area. But at the same time, he's presenting it as an analogy in regard to the machine and the essential self, which was true of the Bringing the Woman to Life chapter also.
So are you implying that he's saying that in this case, mother is the essential self? And that the child is the machine?
No,
I don't think this isn't
the same correspondence as the Bringing the Woman to Life analogy, but I think that he's saying here that, let's say, what would you call it, in the material world aspect of this, you know, I think it's possible to be, I think that probably everybody who's here tonight has seen some of those parents who are so obsessed with the child and obsessed, let's say, with the child, having my child dressed properly and getting, being sure my child gets to the proper schools. And, you know, it's got to be, let's have Montessori school. Let's make sure the preschool gives my child a head start in, you know, the race to a career and a PhD and all the rest of it and so on. Well, I mean, it's a matter of this attitude or orientation. You know, I have a couple of children, and you know I haven't always been around to raise them, which is another story. But you know I think that as a parent, you are faced with these decisions very strongly, because it's sort of like the way it struck my wife and I was sort of like, well, is it going to be better to give up everything we're doing and say, oh, now we're just going to be doing child rearing for 5 or 10 years or something, or is it that you're carrying on your life, that you have a focus outside the home, you have a focus outside yourself, you have goals in life and so on, and now you're having your children come along in your life and participate and see what it means for you to have goals and a centrum of gravity, let's say, which is not necessarily domestic, not necessarily inside your household.
And what's the best gift that you can give to that child?
Yeah. Yeah, we thought a lot about that. I remember when my kids were little.
Yeah. It's the gift of the child being able to see somebody in that lives a life of the essential self. What a gift that is. What a huge gift that is. So.
And don't they say that you should put your own mask on before you put on the child?
Put your own.
Like in the airplane.
Yeah.
You're not of any use to the child unless you helped yourself.
Yeah. Definitely a safety feature.
Yes. Got it. That's like on the airplanes.
The other way to look at this is like saying you also see those parents that are overprotective and over-involved and over-controlling, let's say, of their early childhood and so on. Generally, the children become angry and rebellious at some point, and they bolt. You know, they try to get as far away from the parents as possible. But let's say, now going to the other side of this, which is the analogy side, you know, where I saw some questions that I think Mark Roche raised. Maybe those were emails that you got, David. But in regard to the analogy side of it, okay, in relation to my machine and my essential self, what does this mean that I should keep the centrum of gravity inside in my solar plexus, rather than out there, which is the machine idea? It's like, this is how is this going to serve awakening of the essential self? Awakening of the machine, actually, I should say.
Yeah, the machine, the essential self isn't awake or asleep. Mm-hmm. It's either activated or not activated, or it's more active or less active. It's to the extent that we can spend more time in the world called this new centrum of gravity, as it begins to create a force, we're not going to forget about our machine, are we? It's a little hard to forget about it. We're right here. It's right here.
We're inside the machine trying to figure out how to do something about the machine.
There you go.
So.
And that provides this dance of these two electrical fields. If the machine continues to dominate, and we continue to have only externalities as our centrum of gravity, such it will remain for the rest of our lives. But if we can begin to gradually bring it in, and that there's a new centrum of gravity, that's what's different in that third paragraph, Ivan. And is that in the very first paragraph of the chapter, he says, pacify the mental centrum, and then he goes, but if we have another centrum of gravity, the machine becomes passive and takes on a different and transformational role. The machine has power and energy. That the essential self has presence and attention. And so working together, they become a transformational. The machine can become the transformational apparatus, but only if the mother is guiding. Only if the mother is guiding in a proper way. And the mother it's objective. So for me, it's not a matter of mentation here. It's a matter of finding, as Susan told us, this vibratory force and discerning it for yourself. For me, it's clear and distinct. Okay? It's clear and distinct. And I have a great deal of certainty about that the signature of that vibratory sense. And even if it's a small thing, we can hold like our little suitcase of certainty and take a small step to the next time. And that's why I keep saying, experiment with this in the world. Take it out to the most unusual place. I know that Aria has been, we know that she's been working as a teacher in a very difficult situation, about to end her semester. But she's a very difficult situation. And what did she do? For the first few months, she, moaned and pissed and moaned and, oh my God, and it's impossible. You can't bring the essential self into that space. You just can't.
Yeah, and the real problem is always the administration.
And then, oh my God, have I heard stories. It's the bureaucracy and on and on and on and on and on and on. And what happened? She popped to another level. And then it was possible for her to begin even the small process of the essential self becoming present in that space. And when the essential self is present, let's just take it to an external environment, mm-hmm. Ivan. Let's say that she can exercise her essential self in this classroom, you know, with all these nutcases running around, not just the students, I mean her co-teachers and her administrators too.
Sure.
But if she can stay in that space, then maybe they can see something different too at that moment. And there's a different interplay. And at that time, at that moment, you literally change the world. Literally change the world. It's an actual change that occurs.
This is interesting that you've just given a little capsule lecture along the lines of Claudio Naranjo has written at least one entire book and maybe two or three exactly about this. That he has this wonderful recommendation for teachers training in teachers colleges that if teachers can be given a short course in enlightenment and in the pervading conscious awareness and the essential self, as we would say more or less, that, you know, if they could go in front of students and model an enlightened mindset, yeah, an enlightened outlook instead of like being feeling harassed and persecuted and all, you know, depressed and all the, you know, all the ways these teachers are treated, rather badly, exploited in most educational systems. But anyway, this is what Claudio has, this terrific idea that, you know, that you could educate and raise much more enlightened children.
And
if
I think
you modeled enlightenment for them.
And that's what, and you know, to the extent we are able. And that's what Aria's next is going to be, by the way.
Yeah, her book. Oh, good.
She's just beginning it, I believe,
oh,
if I remember correctly.
Well.
Okay, so what we're talking about here is this interplay, mother and child, but we're talking about each of us finding and standing in a vibratory centrum of gravity that is ours. I know that some individuals, it's clear and distinct for them. It's not, there's no question, there's not a lack of certainty. The lack of certainty, by the way, is a mask. Path world. The lack of certainty is a different form. I call it, just a different form of ego. Having the confidence that you are also an essential self. You didn't create that.
No, I think, but in everyday life, what our everyday lives are about is often a lot of forgetting. So there's
yes.
Forgetting, and then there's more forgetting, and then there's you remember for a few moments, and then there's forgetfulness that comes back again, and then there's some other form of forgetting, and so on and so on.
And then you can flip it, too. And then there's remembering, and then, and then I remembered again.
Yeah.
What is your signature, right? What is your signature? How does it work for you? Does it work for you most of the time that, I forgot? Mm-hmm. Well, that's all good Catholics should say that. I guess Lutherans and Jews can join too.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Okay. So just jumping ahead a little bit. An evolved man is like a mother, and the absolute is like his child, in the sense that he sacrificed to the absolute his being, a smaller diamond for the abrasion of the absolute. He offers his soul, which has produced his own conscious labors, as a grinding wheel for the eventual change of the being of the absolute. So, George, I've here's the beginning of my answer, and I'd love to have your feedback if you're still there. And I think that one reason that we can become such a diamond for the, in a sense, the absolute, is because if we've done this work where the we have a new centrum of gravity and it is the focus of us, and then we have had a breakthrough whereby the machine, the passive force, is actively working together with that essential self, and we form the proper triad, then we are one little spot of diamonds in the whole array of the absolute. And in that little spot of being the diamond, yes, we can become an abrasive force to help in this effort. George?
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
Close. I mean, come on. I'm taking the little I have and just trying to stretch into what some of these things are saying. But I do know that we can become a centrum of gravity of the essential self. I do know that. Go ahead.
Well, you know, well, look at when we use this word absolute. The first thought that pops into my mind, this is the uncreated absolute, the moment before creation. And in the and as he creates creation, there are some creatures, man, for example, that can reflect his the nature of his Trinity, that is, the three forces that make up the uncreated absolute. And so we become like the absolute, but in miniature, and we evolve out of the creation itself, and in essence, we become an evolved man by producing a soul within ourselves, and it's this soul that, that serves as a reflector of reality to the absolute. And
to the absolute, that's exactly right. So we, if we can start to do our work in this way, We're just little guys here, okay? We're little teeny people.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can, what if we open up 1/4 of 1 inch of clarity? And so does Ivan, does the same, and M.A. And Dan, Molly. And it's like maybe a little light starts to shine through, right? So that the dark isn't always there, yeah?
Yeah, Dave, and the other thing I just wanted to point out is really what we're trying to do here is the idea is being presented to us that there is a life force that animates the physical body. That is, there is a life force that is separate, distinct, and different from the totality of the organism we call the physical body with a tyrant of our historical personality. Well, that life force is part of the life force of the uncreated absolute that is now manifesting itself throughout all creation. So what we're trying to do is separate this life force, which we call our essential self, and we're trying to find some way to verify to ourselves, how do we know we have separated it? And what we discover over time is, oh, I see, it's a vibratory sensation, just like we might imagine the absolute vibrating throughout the whole of his creation. And we're trying to concentrate that and make it the centrum of our gravity, so that the with our physical body, our human biological machine, yes, we have to take care of the necessities of life. We have to pay the rent. We have to put food on the table.
And we will.
And we will. But as we become saturated with this life force, we become transformed. And in this process, we ultimately create a soul.
Yeah, and then I feel, George, in this chapter, actually I feel that in this whole book, the author is going, you know, even beyond that, he's keeps on over and over again in various ways answering this question about what is it that we can do with the waking state of the machine? What is it that we can do if the essential self is activated? What is the purpose? What's the use of this work? You know, how can I be of use?
I think we have to be careful there. I think we have to be careful at this point in our work, because there's a temptation to answer that question. And there's a temptation to answer it in a machine way.
Well, it's what, except that it just like, let's say this book, The Hidden Work, is a demonstration that a good example of a centrum of gravity question, which isn't something, which is like the Zen master's question. It's not something you just answer the first morning and say, now I'm a winner, I've answered
Correct.
It. A good centrum of gravity question would be, how can I do something to relieve the suffering of the absolute?
So if you are a true koan connoisseur, what you will do then is you just wait, as it says in the Bible, you wait on the Lord. So you get yourself in a position where you are there, but you wait. You wait with surrender and acquiescence, because the answer may come forth, and it may say to you, here is how your signature will work.
Well, and you know, what I'd like to suggest first, Ivan, is that what we become is a representative of the Creator. The more like the Absolute we are, we're an ambassador for Christ in the local circumstances that we are a part of, and then properly value recognizing our personal significance, we begin to act consciously in the midst of a sleeping world, and that's our representation. We strive to act consciously and voluntarily. So I think that's the end of the path. Can we
it
live entirely
really
conscious
is.
Lives?
And as and I've heard in so many instances where some people say, you know, for a particular woman said that when a woman becomes awakened in this way that George is talking about, that she frees not only herself but her mother and her grandmother,
mm-hmm.
and her daughter and her daughter's daughter.
Generations.
It goes boom, and it makes sense that that's the case. So what's the great gift that we can give our children? Nice tuition.
Awakening of consciousness.
Work
awakening
on yourself.
Are you going to ring the bell, David?
Been ringing the bell?
I have been ringing the bell. And it gets rung for me often, Harry. And the next three paragraphs are interesting because, and George and I have spoken about this too many times, that when we were babies, we're just born, like I'll never forget the day, the morning that Sarah was born, my daughter. It was just, she came in and she was huge. Her being was enormous. And gradually, you know, how do I operate this thing? Where am I? And I the night it was finally, everything was settled, I fell asleep, everybody fell asleep, I'm sitting her next to me in her bassinet, and I wept. Because I knew that I couldn't help from imposing on her my machine characteristics. I wasn't powerful enough. But that worry has stayed with me all these 25 years. And that edge of caution has stayed with me. And thus I gave her that gift. But in childhood, the next few paragraphs says it, do you remember what you had to do in order to form those interests that allowed you to comply? And that's when we buy into the historical personality and we start choosing to be in that manner. And then the very last part of that page, 51, this idea is heretical now, but someday will be accepted by educators as education becomes enlightened. Children need not be taught anything in particular, although the method of teaching them what they wish to learn must be exact, drawing their learning out of them rather than posing some preassembled scholastic structure. How does that sound, Aria?
Yeah, it sounds, to an educator, it sounds radical, like there's a book called Summerhill. This is exactly the type of education
that sounds impossible.
But it's also very Socratic. This is very much
the true Socratic method idea.
The process proposed by Socrates.
At certain ages, a series of shots can be applied. This was actively practiced in several very enlightened ancient civilizations as a natural part of the ordinary process of the child's education. When these shocks are introduced, the diversion of impressions to false centrums is not induced, allowing the child to develop the higher mental, emotional, and moving reflexive centrums along with high attention and conscience. Jim, there it is, conscience there,
mm-hmm.
which should be the natural product of education. It is to be hoped that someday there will be a number of initiates in schools able to perform this function so that conditions can be organized in which this can be introduced into the lives of children. Now it should be stated that the same shocks can be introduced into the adult. However, an adult is very fixated, and the shock can be destructive unless extreme care is taken. Adults are very delicate. So, I pose the question to you in closing. We are adults, and you are not totally fixated. Everybody here is not in the death state of crystallization. There's enough openness, or you wouldn't be here. So, what are those shocks, and what form can we create? What can we do together, since we have an accidental and artificial situation occurring here? What is a shock that we can produce that will help us as adults in this manner? Mark and Dan.
You're saying they have an answer?
They have the answer, 100%.
Well, let's get Dan on microphone.
Dan, we're going to get you. Boss arriving.
We're going to demonstrate how to elicit an answer from within.
And we're going to also demonstrate a shock. Where is Mark? Here we go. Mark. So Dan, what would be what's an example of a shock? Okay. But how was the experience
discovering that you lost something very valuable?
Is it okay if he sits at your mic
a
moment?
Dan, why don't you
come over here. And Mark, you're still there. I'm going to read what Mark said on one of his on his last email. Mark says, "This was more work than I had expected, but greatly enjoyed and appreciated the process. I am fascinated to perhaps be a bit of a fly on the wall and observe what emerges in the group discussion. This exercise has given me a much better appreciation of the overall process, and that, or though it seems, the explorations are almost more important than the answers." That's what he said. Pull the mic to you a little bit, if you would, please. And just how was the process of doing the summary?
It was difficult, for me anyway. It was delving into something that I only vaguely comprehended, and it was a bit like driving into fog.
Um,
And just through talking it over with Mark, certain things fell into place and became more clear. Not completely, but more than when we started.
What did it feel like doing it? Being in that place of, I don't know.
Uncomfortable.
It was uncomfortable, wasn't it?
Yes.
And it was uncomfortable that, what were you working on? Where did you have to go to pull forth some of the answers? And I don't know if Mark's still on, but yeah, that's also a question. Where did you go? That.
Here, just trying. I couldn't rely on what I already had. I had to just come to the present and hope that something would clarify it.
So that was for him a form of a shock, is what I'm saying. It was, we want to think of, oh, I know, a sort of shock, because we'll get those really wild, crazy teachers and they'll beat us up, and, oh, yeah, that's cool. But what can we do together here? And that's what these two individuals did. They worked, they did a great job. and but it's because they dug inside. They dug inside and went from all the way, I don't know, to here are some thoughts I had. And exposed themselves. And like you expose yourself, and here you are, okay? You're out. And you're out in this field exposing yourself. It's a good thing. Is it a good thing?
Yes. Still uncomfortable.
It's still uncomfortable.
Well, and Mark added something.
Good.
He said, sometimes I felt some tension within myself and in the interaction between us, and yet the cooperativeness between us seemed to create an opening for using the tensions for delving deeper into the subject.
So it created like a new space, and it's only when we push ourselves to those new spaces. I've been on the phone with some individuals, you know, at ungodly hours in the middle of the night, and all that you can do is, I don't know what to do or where to go, but I know I can stay here. I can be here, right? I can stay in the space, and sometimes that's the only skills that we have and that we can bring forth. So I wanted to just spend a minute on Mark and Dan and the work that they did on this chapter. And Mark, I hope you put the email comments, that the last email, put it on the site too, some really good stuff, but yours too, that last email that you sent a couple of days ago.
Thank you.
So, anything else, Susan? Yeah, I didn't know I'd get through this. I was like, I wasn't sure I'd even get through this chapter. The next chapter, which is chapter 7, is called Pity for the Absolute. And Harry, did you get a hold of Lupe?
I haven't called her yet. I left her a message on email telling her I would call her after class.
Okay, good. So do what you can.
Per day.
And I think that may be a 2-week chapter, by the way. Okay? So don't, you know, so we'll get some of it done for the first part, and then we'll go to the next one. And then I'll sign, if there's any of the next three chapters after 7, which is 8, 9, and 10, how I change the inevitable is 8, 9 is activating the astral body, and 10 is the lightning rod function. If any of those particularly appeal to you, let me know, and I'll hook you up with somebody. I already have one person assigned for 10, but we need somebody else. So anyway, wow.
Oh, you know, there is something I'd like to add. The summary that we came up with, there's no way I could have done that on my own.
Okay. There's no way, he says, Dan says to us, I could have done that on my own. There's no way I can do this, sit in this chair on my own. Okay? It takes us to do it together. So I thank you for coming this evening, and I look forward to seeing you next Wednesday at 7 when we go on chapter 7. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Thanks, David, Dan, and Ivan.
Thank you, George. Thank you, Susan.
You're welcome. Good night. Thank you very much.
Good night, Harry.
Good night, everyone. Great class.
Good night, John Boy.